and the rat coat. Anyway, summertime, just the chrysis, being quite restlessness and so on.
It releases it often, I think. Are you talking about meditation?
The impurities are usually referred to as stress within the TM movement. And by practicing the meditation, the transcendental meditation, the idea that one is releasing the stress, and that is the way purification is understood.
If that person can fly, he can teach the other to fly only. He cannot teach them to eradicate their unwholesomeness. As much as they can do is to teach the other to fly, that's all. And what's the use of being able to fly?
And even then they can only do so if they have the accumulation to fly.
And I don't believe that they can fly. Because I know about the device using for.
What do you mean exactly by flying?
Levitate. But then I think that some people can reach a sort of self-hypnosis. I'm not condemning this at all, because I don't know the facts. But I think so that they believe they are flying. It's auto-suggestion sometimes. Perhaps.
Like,
but one doesn't know, you see, because I really don't, I haven't seen it and don't know.
But it isn't whether or not one can fly or not. It's not going to be the flying itself which purifies. Whatever purification takes place has to be through understanding the different realities and flying.
You know, I know it isn't
like
it isn't
a walking a concept.
Yeah, it isn't the purification of the defilement. Of wrong understanding and taking in for the permanent yourself. Yes, but I just felt that I needed to ask that.
Yes.
Because it's been on my mind for a long time.
Yes, I'm interested in that.
I always think of the motive of performing the superpower, because why does he or she do that? It's very important. What for?
It's very natural to want to fly, or to want to be able to walk on water, or to be able to do all these things. But I think it's natural to want to do these things, but also not to kid oneself that it is just for some pure motive of developing wholesomeness. Like one wants so many things, and one should know that it is wanting, which is so different from understanding more about what is going on from them.
But isn't it possible that some people can do extraordinary things that we have no idea about? That there may be people who
when
can.
There is the right cause, there must be the right result. So we can study the cause, whether it's the right cause or not.
The cause, yes.
Depends what one's aim in life is, whether it's to be able to perform extraordinary feats. And if that's what one's aim is, one should find out more about it and develop the way to.
I don't mean extraordinary feats. I mean, this may have nothing to do with it, but I know that supposing a child is in danger, a mother can run faster than Roger Bannister or any of the. Mother can run about 20 miles or 30 miles an hour to save the child. It must be the adrenaline glands or something working very quickly, but you can do almost superhuman things. If there's the right cause, if it's saving a life, you could run very fast, at any age, for a short time. So people can do extraordinary things if the cause is there, I suppose.
Yes. But the cause of being able to perform superpower must be the attainment of the fifth jhana. So that person must have the right understanding of tranquility, which is wholesome, not only concentration.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps they have got that virtue.
Well, that's what I wonder.
Perhaps they've got reached the stage of such tranquility.
We can think about their understanding, but let's talk about the right cause, the tranquility itself, the real one. What is it? What moment is calm? What moment is tranquil? It must be a moment of being wholesome only. unwholesomeness cannot be tranquil.
It's impossible to attain the jhanas without a wholesomeness, essentially. One will not attain the jhanas unless there is wholesome tranquility and wholesome conditions, very powerful conditions for wholesomeness.
Mm-hmm. And for any kind of full tranquility, there has to be right understanding of tranquility developed. Otherwise, wrong kids, wrong self, it's tranquility.
Yes, you have to know what tranquility is. For instance, you can have a very pleasant feeling and mistake it for gusta,
for tranquility, but
then in effect it's probably attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because lots of attachments can give you very pleasant feelings. Yeah.
And one doesn't want to consider that maybe it isn't wholesome at that moment because it is so pleasant, it is so nice.
Which makes things difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So if one doesn't have the right understanding of tranquility, one cannot separate the unwholesome attachment, the subtle attachment, from the calmness at all. It should be this moment, because right understanding should arise and see wholesomeness as wholesomeness and unwholesomeness as unwholesomeness now. Everything depends on this present moment.
Yes.
If one develops tranquility, one develops it now with right understanding of tranquility. So now, if one hasn't developed right understanding yet, how can one know whether this moment is wholesome or unwholesome? While one talks about realities, one has some right understanding, but it doesn't mean that one has right understanding and wholesomeness all the time. Unwholesomeness and wholesomeness arises alternately all the time. So it needs the precise understanding of each moment to know whether it's wholesome or unwholesome. And that person who knows can develop tranquility. It doesn't mean that that person does not know anything, just want to concentrate. And by concentrating, it will lead to more and more tranquility. That is wrong.
Mm.
Because it has to begin with right understanding of this moment, whether it's calm or not, and what conditions calmness. If the object is the wrong object, it cannot condition calmness. Calmness depends on right object as well.
So one has to know as well as vipassana,
And the right objects are then the
right object of insight meditation and right object of tranquil meditation. It must be right object, otherwise it cannot lead to tranquility or insight. It doesn't
what
mean,
do you mean about the right object of
if one just look at the Buddha image and thinks that one is calm, it's only thinking. What about the attachment to the shape and form of the Buddha image? If it's the beautiful one, there is attachment. Appreciates the beautiful form and shape. That is not tranquility. So that is not right object for calmness. So one has to study the 40 objects of tranquil meditation very clearly, that one knows why it can condition calmness and why the other object cannot condition calmness. For example, the corpse or the skull, it's one of the tranquil meditation object, but whoever looks at it, sometimes it conditions fear or aversion instead of calmness. So it doesn't mean that everyone should come and look at the skull in order to be calm. If there is no right understanding developed, why skull can be object of meditation, of tranquil meditation, that person cannot have calmness. Because calmness is not on that object, but calmness is with citta. It's citta. It's consciousness at that moment.
Even if one looked at the skull and one was reminded of impermanence and one had kusala citta, tranquility arising with that kusala citta, one could continue to have as your object looking at that skull. But kusala citta may not arise a moment later. It may arise and then a kusala citta may arise.
Certainly. So right understanding must be precise enough to distinguish moment of kusala from akusala in order to develop more kusala. It depends on right understanding of each moment.
But you can't help having akusala sometimes, especially...
It's conditioned, but it's not self.
No.
So that moment can be moment of the development of insight, vipassana, instead of tranquility. Mm. But when there's right understanding, there is calmness at that moment as well. Mm. So one doesn't have to worry about calmness when one develops right understanding of vipassana.
Because non-attachment comes into that, doesn't
yes.
it? So that,
mm-hmm. that is calmness.
Calm. Mm. If you...
So you, in fact, don't have to have an object of tranquility.
Any
if
object.
If you're developing vipassana,
yes.
because it can be any object.
Mm-hmm. Mm. There are moments when I may experience very strong akusala citta, very strong dosa, and I can notice that I'm experiencing very strong dosa, and maybe I can look and examine the conditions, you know, which conditioned the dosa, and maybe at some level that would be considered right understanding or insight, but it doesn't necessarily bring any calm.
That is the intellectual level of understanding condition of aversion at that moment. So the insight level of vipassana jnana cannot be the first jnana, the first knowledge of vipassana is not the understanding of conditions yet. It's impossible to understand the condition which conditions that reality at that moment. But it can be thinking about condition, which is different level of right understanding. So first of all, instead of thinking about condition, there can be moment of understanding that reality as only a reality which is not self. Otherwise, it's my aversion. Now my aversion is less or strong.
So even if you thought about it as my dosa,
yes.
mm-hmm. and you were aware that that was the wrong understanding, would that be a condition for the
That is not wrong understanding, but it's only the intellectual understanding of dosa. Mm. It's not the direct understanding of a reality which is conditioned. But one doesn't have to think of condition at that moment, because one always takes dosa for my dosa. So the more precise understanding is the moment when nothing interferes at that moment. Only the right understanding of the characteristic of dosa. Nothing interferes, nothing inserts. And the understanding itself is not self either, or awareness itself is not self. Because in the beginning, many people may try to be aware, and later on they realize that it's wrong, because that concerns with the idea of self, because one tries and tries to be aware. But when there is more understanding, the understanding sees awareness as a conditioned reality. It is aware instantly before one can think of, I shall be aware of this or that object. Even awareness is conditioned. So right understanding can tell the moment with awareness and the moment without awareness. if awareness itself does not arise, no other reality can perform the function of being aware of any object. So when there is awareness, it is the reality of awareness which has arisen, and it is aware of an object by itself at that moment. It will eliminate the idea of I will be aware of this or that object.
So in the course of life, if one has aversion, it's better not to say I have aversion, but there is aversion, or there is something, but nothing to do, not mentioning oneself.
One cannot stop thinking about aversion, but right understanding can distinguish moment of thinking from moment of studying and seeing aversion as only aversion, without
as a reality,
without concept.
Yes, without concept. Mm-hmm. Yes.
At this moment of seeing, one cannot stop thinking that seeing is a reality which experiences visible object. But right understanding can distinguish that moment from concept and the moment of being aware and begin to understand without thinking. Thinking can arise before or after moment of being aware of seeing. It's so short, but one begins to know that it's different from moment of thinking. The moment of being aware is different from moment of thinking about reality which appears. Because when there is thinking, concept is the object of thinking, not the characteristic of reality which appears anymore.
So that when dosa is arising, looking at it intellectually is not looking at it.
It's not the development of direct awareness. Mm.
So one does nothing then? One just...
One studies, but it's
with
not...
What tool does one study?
Awareness.
Because awareness isn't there, if there are no conditions for awareness to arise.
But the understanding of awareness will condition awareness.
But one should not think about it.
One cannot stop thinking. But the more one understands the difference between the thinking and the direct awareness, it will condition the direct awareness
of thinking.
Thinking or of reality which appears. Because thinking is also real.
Yes, I was just going to say,
hard to stop thinking now.
That's
so
right.
By understanding what is the wrong understanding, that will be the conditions for the right understanding to arise.
The right understanding will eliminate wrong understanding stage by stage on the way up to becoming sotapanna.
And even if there's a lot of dosas, and somewhere in the middle of it there's just one moment of awareness of the dosas,
that's why it's wrong to try to stop thinking. But one can be aware of thinking as only a reality, which is different from seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and feeling. And then thinking cannot influence one as before, when one has more understanding about it.
The thinking can, in a moment of heavy dosa, there are all sorts of possibilities. It's just like a great vacuum that one is being pulled. Thinking keeps the dosa at the level of mental, at the level of citta, sort of maybe going over into speech and then maybe spilling over into action. And some awareness, for example, that the dosa is akusala.
So it can be controlled by thinking.
At least even that small thing prevents one from being sucked into the pool.
If there is awareness of dosa at that moment, there is no thinking of speaking wrongly or...
It's so many... The one moment that can be the awareness of dosa, which is kusala, the awareness of it as it is, and the next moment there can be the speaking in an unhelpful way, so many different moments, not all.
I think what Chip means is that it's only the thinking that controls the speech and the action. I mean, that's putting, I know, but the
right awareness works better, because at the moment of having right understanding, there is no time to think of hurting the other through speech or deed.
I think he means that if in the middle of all that there's considering, just on a thinking level, that this is dose and it really is unhelpful and it really isn't good to act on it, just the considering in a helpful way is better than nothing at all.
So yes.
Maybe there are no conditions for awareness, but if there is just some considering in a helpful
that's
way...
That's the level of kusala, but it's not the level of understanding reality as not self.
But it's better than nothing.
Yes, it's better than a kusala.
Any kusala.
Yes.
Is it possible to have metta? How does one have metta?
Not at will, not at will. But when metta arises, one knows that it's different from dosa.
That's for sure.
One likes it to arise, but it depends on conditions whether it arises or not.
It can be so hard, it can be such a shock, like one can really think that because one hasn't said any harsh speech for a long time, or one hasn't done a certain kind of action for a long time, one can really kid oneself that one's past that, and then something happens in the conditions and there's a shock and one suddenly finds oneself doing harmful things and saying harmful things, and one gets so depressed about it, and there's no awareness and no understanding at all. There's always that shock over and over again.
All types of reality can arise anytime by conditions.
And it's so hard to really be honest with oneself and really...
If you're a Buddhist, you're not immune from dosa.
The anagami can eradicate dosa.
What can
the third stage of enlightenment.
The third stage. Mm-hmm.
The first stage cannot eradicate dosa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we feel dosa, we may not necessarily even recognize the moments in between when perhaps we do have metta or we do have...
Just a few short moments because we're so concentrated on that dosa. It really feels like there's just one long stretch of dosa and that we had nothing but dosa yesterday. Well, in fact, there's many things going on. But patience, I suppose, comes into it, doesn't it? I don't know what the word is when there's dosa, if one can be aware of calmness.
When we talk about patience, we think of only one aspect of patience. That is to be patient when one confronts with unpleasant objects. Mm. But what about pleasant objects?
Even more patience.
One has to be patient enough not to be attached to it.
Yes, yes.
And that's the meaning of patience.
Yes, yes.
I think also this is those the thing that even beginning to consider that the problems are within us, because before we're so used to thinking of the problems outside ourselves. So even beginning to realize that the problem is the dosa and the lobha and all these things within us is important, because before there was just as much dosa, but maybe we never realized it because we were so used to always thinking the problems were the other people, the other situations, and not the not our dosa, which was doing the harm.
Yes, well, it's always easier to think that something else is responsible.
It's wrong.
It's a temptation.
Thinking.
It's wrong thinking.
And we do it all the time.
But it's so easy to think it's not one's own fault that somebody else has caused it. But I think that's where right understanding probably comes in. That you, if you just realize that
to let go of those ideas, very, very hard.
You might think
very hard.
You might think initially, well, the other person is to blame, but the right understanding might arise and remind you that perhaps it's just
most of the time we don't want to. We don't really want to be honest with ourselves.
No,
I have a very difficult situation at work with someone I work with, and I spend so much time and energy just really thinking that this person is responsible for all the problems, because it's so much easier to think like that than to really begin to...
But how about, in all justice, if the person was responsible to some extent? Mm. I mean, if you asked a just person, if you're examining yourself rightly, that you have dosa, say, but perhaps this person is causing trouble, then how do you deal with that?
Well, one could have... I'm sorry.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I find it useful when I work to constantly think perhaps of the positive qualities that they also
have.
And also, if you know that this person has dosa, you can remind yourself that they're just continuing to accumulate dosa. So that can be a condition for... compassion on your part.
Yes,
I think all these things are very useful, as well as, of course, vipassana of developing gusana at the level of knowing characteristics that are arising.
And it can prevent those arising in yourself, of course.
Yeah, I think it depends on what one sees as being the cause of one's problems. Like, when I talk about the situation at work to most of my friends, they just say, oh, of course she's to blame, you know, she said that she's done that. And I mean, it's much nicer to hear that than to face up to one's own
dosa.
But the more I study the Dharma, the more I realise that in fact the way that this person has reacted or the situation I'm in is by conditions, and is it really just the proximate cause, and that the real problem is my accumulated dosa, my
and
accumulated anger, which is going to come out again and again, whenever the conditions for it.
Creating worse conditions.
Be aware of it until understanding does develop, which does understand.
In any case, it passes, whoever the girl is, that all the conditions for her bad behaviour, shall we say, are falling away all the time. So maybe they're going to get better.
Yeah, I think that the way that other people behave, someone behaves in a particular way, and if they behave with a lot of dosa, then they are accumulating more dosa, which will bring its results. So one can have compassion, because one can know how much one harms oneself by that dosa.
Mm.
If one gets angry in return, then one is just accumulating more dosa oneself, which doesn't help that person or oneself.
Quite often, if you don't react with dosa, that person is so shocked, but... They might even smile, but they might just stop looking so irritated.
Where do you work in the BBC? I'm not getting right down to brass tacks.
I work in the ABC in Australia.
All these realities that we've been talking about are conditioned. We can't control it. We can talk and we can know in theory that dosa doesn't help anything, but then the conditions are there. And it arises because it isn't self, it isn't my dosa that I can control or stop or change. The more one realises how unhelpful, how unskillful it is, the more understanding there is, the less, the more it's going to help. But one can't stop these things from happening. One can't...
No, you can't change all the conditions
yourself. You can't stop dosa from arising. This is where the right understanding is so helpful, because... you can be aware of it as just...
And this is the way we can solve the problem of guilt, too, I think.
Yes, and it's the development of metta as well. Otherwise, when will you develop it? If it's not at that moment.
We want to, I find anyway, it's so much easier to have metta to people we're close and friendly with, and so hard to have metta to people we don't like, or people who we think have treated us badly. But we try to select and choose again who we should have metta towards.
Can we just cling to that as a gusla characteristic of that person? We don't necessarily want to see that person may have moments of also kindness and generosity.
But
and
when it's through metta, it has to be common to all. Otherwise, who knows whether it's motivated by attachment or by metta, because they are so close.
Sarah and I were discussing the other night, and we're often asked by people, if you can only direct metta towards living beings, And in reality, there are no living beings, but they're only a concept. What, in fact, are we directing metta towards?
All the time, we cannot think of only reality because we are used to concept, thinking of them in concept. But at that moment can be thinking with metta or thinking with akusala, depending on conditions.
But it seems then at that moment of metta that there's some kind of wrong view involved also, if one's, because when one thinks in terms of people and beings and thinks that, and really thinks that those people or beings exist, it's a wrong understanding of realities. So it seems that when there's metta directed to beings, there's...
What about Sotapanna? They know different people as different people, and they also know that it's only thinking. They have no doubt about thinking, no doubt about a moment of concept of being aware of reality. But for those who do not develop right understanding, they have the firm wrong view about permanent being.
So can a Sotapanna have, well, a Sotapanna has lots of metta, but and it's still directed towards beings, although
certainly
he knows that beings are
beings.
Different moment of thinking of concept.
But there are no beings, no self. So why are we spending such a lot of time trying to get rid of ourselves?
There are many unwholesome realities and wholesome realities.
That's all there is.
Mm-hmm.
So no self, but to try and achieve the nirvana, which is selfless, since we're already selfless, what is the journey for?
The understanding of selfless in the beginning is only the intellectual understanding.
I see.
That is not enough to eradicate the deep-rooted idea of self at moment of seeing, hearing, feeling, thinking.
Yes.
That's why the right understanding should be developed in order to be able to eradicate wrong view completely.
Yes, because there is no self.
Mm-hmm. But there are different realities all the time.
There are different realities and there's a physical body for a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then, how are the number of lives, rebirth, determined? Seems unfair that some people should have had so many and learnt so much, and other people not many, perhaps.
Reality is so just. It cannot be unjust.
Yes.
So one knows that even one does not like to be reborn, but when there are conditions for rebirth, there must be rebirth according to conditions.
Yes. So it's all conditions, really.
Seeing is a reality. Hearing is another reality. Thinking is another reality. Each moment is only conditioned reality.
We don't know what happened in the past or what conditions there are to bring about certain results, certain realities now. So we see something, we experience something, we think it's so unfair that things don't just happen for no reason.
No.
Without conditions, without causes from the past.
Yes, and I suppose one brings a lot of former lives in our consciousness, do we?
Which is why it's so important to be aware of the realities now, the dosa now, because the more moments of dosa there are now, the more it's accumulating more
for the next
dosa
rebirth.
For
the next tomorrow.
Moment, tomorrow and other lives.
And do we accumulate aversion towards certain objects?
Yes.
Which can carry through into other lives? So if we have a very strong aversion to a person now, and if there are conditions to meet that being in a, or another being,
being
in another life, that
not necessary to be the same one.
But it could be.
Why cannot?
So I'm confused about this having metta to beings or persons, because if that's the Dipana who realises that there aren't any beings, does he still think when he has metta that it is towards the person at that moment?
The understanding of reality at the moment of seeing arises through mind, which conditioned the concept of the object which is seen. But Asotapanna does not have any doubt about those moments of sense door and mind door.
Oh, he makes an absolute distinction between concept and reality.
Yes.
All
and
the time.
There are conditions for having concept, but it's only concept.
In other words, he may behave in a very conventional way,
yes,
according to the concepts that are shared, even though those concepts are a wrong view.
So when he has metta to, one can have metta towards a person and yet have no doubt that in fact the person is only a concept. Mm-hmm. So one can have metta to a person,
yes,
with full confidence that it
and
is a concept.
He understands that metta is conditioned, not his metta. Not the self's metta.
So one could practice metta even without another person. One could just practice it, say, as since there are no other people.
But it has to have the person as object for metta. It doesn't mean that there has to be someone in the room.
It has to have any living being.
It's a concept.
But one could develop
it's just
a concept.
One's
When one thinks of anyone, one can think with metta or without metta. So when one develops metta, one thinks with metta, not with attachment or aversion.
So knowing that people are concepts doesn't mean that one still thinks about people.
And one knows that why it conditions thinking about people. After seeing, after hearing, then the mind or process arises, and it's time for thinking of concepts, which is conditioned.
It's hard to believe that people are concepts.
It's hard to believe that anything
is concepts. Well, it is hard, because...
we really take the people and the tables and the chairs for being real, but then when we consider how do we experience chairs, when we touch it, it's... No,
yes, I don't understand, because we're brought up to say, well, that thing with legs is a table. So we accept that. It's a concept. It's a word. And that I can understand about all material things, except not people so easily. That people are concepts. Because you can touch them. You can see them.
Touch what?
That they,
touch
they're
what?
Soft.
Yes.
Or hard.
Yes, and then this is also hard.
That's also hard or soft.
Hardness is hardness in its reality.
Yes. But...
it cannot be a person or a table, because...
the table doesn't breathe and a person breathes.
But hardness cannot breathe either. This hardness cannot breathe.
But you can feel breath.
Breath is hard or soft, but hardness cannot breathe.
No hardness can't
be. No, that's true. It's just experiencing hardness. Hardness here as opposed to hardness there. How does the... this is what someone's always asking me. How does the sanya, how does the memory know that this hardness is a person opposed to... or how does it start thinking about a person? Why does one start thinking of the concept of a person when there's experience of this hardness as opposed to
a table?
If the sense door, then the mind door experience the same object with the accumulation, previous accumulation conditioned concept.
But if the hardness has exactly the same, it's just hardness with exactly the same characteristic, how does that...
when there is awareness, there is no idea or concept of self, of being. It's right memory of hardness as hardness.
Rather than memory of it as a concept.
But why should the sense-door process, which has experienced the hardness, this here is just hardness, why should it be followed by a mind-door process which thinks about the concept of a person?
Sometimes mind-door does not think of any concept at all. But mind experiences the same object as sense door by its nature.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm.
So if, for instance, we hear, that can be an experience of the sense door?
And mind door, yes. Mm-hmm. All the time, the mind door follows the sense door.
So if there's the experiencing of hardness, the hardness is just hardness, and there may or there may not be conditions for the mind or process to experience the same object, and if there are, then there'll be the thinking about a person. Mm-hmm. So it depends entirely on whether the conditions for it to be followed by that mind or process.
Right.
No reason in the hardness at all. Mm-hmm.
What makes us recognize different people so quickly? I mean, everybody's quite different, and when you see somebody, it's memory.
And memory is not self, it's a mental factor which always remembers. Whenever it arises, it remembers.
It remembers, mental factor. Mm-hmm.
The mental factor, this mental factor remembers. It performs the function of remembering,
yes,
recognizing.
And it usually remembers a concept, doesn't it?
No, not just concept.
But I mean, if I see you, and there's this citta thing maybe that goes very quickly, and then mental concept of kunsujin comes in.
Yes.
And so I experience mental concept of kunsujin over and over again, and I mistake that for seeing
you.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. When we try to understand, say, the difference between hearing and sound, it seems so close together. Because we have to experience the sound through our hearing, and it's very difficult to separate those moments.
When one keeps in mind that sound cannot appear without hearing, without a reality which can experience it, it can be conditioned for understanding at moment of hearing that it's not sound, but it's the knowing, the experiencing of sound at that moment.
So what's the characteristic of just sound?
It appears. It cannot experience. It appears to hearing only. So there must be hearing besides sound when sound appears. Because sound appears to hearing. In the reality which experiences object arises all the time. That's why it's difficult to see it as a moment of experiencing different objects. At moment of seeing, it's a moment of experiencing visible object. At moment of hearing, it must be different moment. It cannot be the same moment. And that moment is the experiencing of sound. So the experiencing arises and experiences different objects all the time. But it's only the experiencing, not self. Now it experiences all the time. That's why to be aware of sound or visible object or smell or taste is not enough. Because it cannot eradicate the attachment to the experiencing as the self who experiences different objects.
It's very hard to have complete non-attachment because we're conditioned, I suppose, to enjoying, I don't mean indulging, but enjoying things.
That's why.
If you enjoy them, and is there anything against enjoying?
That's why Buddha didn't ask anyone to stop enjoying anything, but he encourages everyone to develop right understanding.
So that you can enjoy it without
certainly,
becoming attached?
Certainly.
Because I'm going around in circles, I'm sorry, okay. I must be stupid. So that you can take a joy in things, but not be attached.
It's wrong if one tries to stop enjoying anything, because that cannot eradicate the idea of self.
No.
Only the right understanding of all realities can eradicate the idea of self. Because when one enjoys something, there can be awareness of that moment of enjoyment as only a reality. It cannot stay. It cannot last.
Yeah.
And there are many realities at that moment to be object of right understanding, not only enjoyment. Because when there is awareness, one begins to understand how enjoyment is conditioned. If one does not see, can there be enjoyment at that moment? If one does not hear, can there be any enjoyment at that moment? So one knows whether this moment of enjoyment is conditioned by seeing, or this moment of enjoyment is conditioned by hearing. Different moment, different doorway of enjoyment.
But usually when we talk about enjoyment, what we're usually talking about is some kind of attachment, liking something, having a pleasant
meal. Like your favourite chocolate or ice cream or something.
It's so nice, it's so pleasant. Mm-hmm. And usually one is just concerned about having a good time for oneself then, with no net and no concern for anyone else.
According to one's accumulation. But right understanding can be aware of a moment of reality and does not take it for my or mine or self. So only a moment of awareness is better than none. One has to have right understanding of all kinds of realities in order to sharpen right understanding, that it can be conditioned for the moment that highly developed right understanding can eradicate the idea of self from a moment of being aware of any object. Because one cannot know at what time one will become enlightened of this or of that object. This moment of being aware of hardness can be conditioned for becoming an arhata, for the person who has developed right understanding enough for becoming an arhata. The same hardness, the same moment of awareness, but different levels of right understanding. Awareness is the same, the object is the same, but right understanding is different. When one begins to develop right understanding, it's so weak that one is not sure whether it's right understanding of hardness at that moment or of the experiencing of hardness. One becomes surer and surer about the object, whether it's the hardness or the experiencing of hardness. But that is not the stage of Sotapanna yet. And one knows that it's not the stage of insight wisdom yet, because reality does not appear as it is. It seems like it appears, but only seems. So it's not the moment when it appears as it is.
You mean it, awareness arises, but without wisdom necessarily?
And right understanding just begins to grow little by little. But it will be the distinguished one when reality appears as it is.
When reality does appear as it is, then right mindfulness is aware of that reality, and right understanding understands the characteristic of that reality perfectly, is that a moment of experiencing Nibbana?
Not yet. Only the first Vipassana Jnana. Don't go so fast. One has to climb up stage by stage.
The longer trip than I thought. Can I use this moment to ask if anybody would like tea or coffee?
Or orange juice.
Or orange juice. Please, everybody stay there. No.
Well, I'll have some.
I'd like some tea, please.
Tea, please.
We very glibly talk about the middle way when we're talking about Dharma. But it seems to me that the middle way is very, very special.
It's very,
very subtle.
Yeah.
And that there's so many levels, I suppose, that you can talk about the middle way.
Exactly, does the middle way mean?
Yes, exactly, what does the middle way mean? Mm-hmm. In terms of the Eightfold Path, it means those factors only arise when we have Satipatthana, don't they? The right factors of the Eightfold Path, the mental factors.
Mm-hmm.
But just wondering if you could perhaps just say a little bit more about what does the middle way actually mean?
The middle way is the moment when there is right awareness of the right object, with right understanding that it's only awareness of a reality. It is aware. It arises. It's middle way because there is no one who is able to direct awareness to be aware of this or that object. Otherwise, one is attached to a certain object.
And
otherwise, one will be attached to a certain object.
It's the middle way because at that moment one knows that it isn't a person that can direct or control. Or
mm-hmm.
So one just has to accept that reality is
right understanding sees right awareness, that is only right awareness of the right object at that moment by itself, by conditions.
Yes, so that there is no self to prevent it from arising.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing it as it really is.
Mm-hmm. Very natural.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be such a, as I meant to state, status, I think it can be such a relief to find out more about the Dharma, because otherwise before one thinks that one has to change one's way of life or do something different all the time or always try and make things other than they are. We make it so hard for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the more we realise that we can't control or can't force or we don't have to change our way of life but have to just accept our accumulations and our lobha and our dosa for what it is, the less we try all the time to change things.
And that's the middle way.
Yes, otherwise it can create tensions and conflicts. So in fact, when you're talking about making a decision one way or the other, is not the middle way at that moment.
When there is awareness, one knows that it's conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the self who makes it.
Yes, I'm also getting back to what you were saying earlier about giving advice to people. You were saying that if we're truly kind,
with understanding about wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, we can help them. Because only wholesomeness can lead to happiness.
Yeah, so regardless of whether the other person understands what you're saying or not, you have no control over, but if you have confidence in giving the right advice,
in wholesomeness, we can help them to have more wholesomeness.
What I find so difficult is that sometimes I start to explain something and start to explain with all sorts of good intentions, and then suddenly one finds that there's just so much conceit or attachment to what one's saying or to their opinion, then it seems one has to go on. But one realises also that it isn't wholesome at all, and it's really hard. When one's talking, there can be so much.
That's why one can see the value of satipatthana, that it is so helpful, because it knows what is right and what is wrong, and what is wholesome and what is unwholesome.